How late will Charlotte be today? How late will Charlotte be today? Will it be 5 minutes or an hour and 15? How late will Charlotte be today?
You think you're real cute, huh?
My. Miracles do happen. Clocking in at 5:58 p.m. for the first time in 3 weeks, Charlotte is early. You all right?
I am not.
Oh, shit. Hey, what's up? Char, what's going on? Did somebody die?
Yeah, my fucking career did.
No, what? What do you mean? You got fired.
No, I didn't get it.
Oh, the promotion.
Yeah.
It's bullshit. Did they just tell you?
No, they told me last week.
I'm sorry, Char. You work so hard.
Wait, you're not mad at me?
Why would I be?
For, you know, not telling you sooner?
No, cousin, I know how you are. You have to process.
Thanks.
Who'd they give it to?
Fucking Josh.
Fucking Josh? Fucking new Josh? Fucking just finished undergrad this year, Josh?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Fucking mansplainy, rich daddy, privileged ass.
Hey, okay, stop.
Fucking mixed his own shoe prints with the suspects at the fucking
crime
scene.
Stop. I don't even want to go there. I just want to be sad.
Okay, you can be sad. We can be sad. I'm sorry.
Me too. Okay, let me wipe my face before Connor comes in here with some silver lining bullshit.
Our friend's positivity is both inspiring and fatiguing.
I mean, it's easy to be positive when you're an
app. Yep.
Okay. I am going to get some air before we start. All right, I'll be back in a sec.
Out here smoking again. Wouldn't it be cooler? Wouldn't it be grand if I couldn't care? Admired from everywhere, impenetrable, the one and only. She'd have her own ceremony. You know she'd never be lonely. I'm so sick of wise men. Little girl lost out here smoking again.
Want to grab a drink after this?
You know what? Yeah, I do.
Great! I'll invite Oliver.
Okay, don't push your luck.
Come on, he has a PhD.
I don't care.
Ladies, relax. I am here. Everything is going to be fine. Here, have some cake.
Where were you? I was stuck downstairs talking to your dad about his new milkweed plants for like a half hour.
They're the only place monarch butterflies can lay their eggs.
Good God, he got you too.
You know that cake is going to mess your tummy up.
Okay, but it's worth it.
Wait, is that
creeper cake? Yes, and it's actually quite delicious even a week
later.
Spit it out. You need to spit it out
okay,
right now.
Okay, chill. It's fine. I made him eat it first. He's not going to poison himself.
You saw him? You saw Mitchell?
Yes, we had lunch and cake, so don't worry about it. Everything's fine. Let's just start the episode.
You are out of your fucking mind. If I had known at StormRage1212 was fucking Mitch from high school, I would have blocked him right there.
Start the jingle. Hello, good people! Welcome back to Primetime Crime Time, the show where we explore spooky crimes committed by spooky people. My name is Connor, and as always, I am joined by the glorious and gifted Charlotte and the passionate and powerful Alex.
We love alliteration.
Some might even call me a poet. How are we feeling today, you two?
You know, I am feeling. Alex?
Afraid I don't have an answer for you either.
But we are going to jump in anyway because our good friend Connor hasn't given us an alternative. I just want to thank you all for, you know, your wonderful likes and comments on our Patreon. If you haven't already subscribed, maybe do it because there are all kinds of special treats for you on there and it helps put food in our bellies so we can continue to freak you out. We are just so grateful for your support and it is truly baffling to me that you've made us, you know, bullshitting about true crime a part of your routines.
I don't get it either, but I love it.
Oh, come on, guys. We're pretty dang cool.
Two of us are.
Yeah. Today, we have a particularly eerie and poignant case to dive into. The mysterious death of Tamla Horsford, a black woman who was found dead at an all-white adult sleepover in Forsyth County, Georgia in 2017.
I will say, I do want to take some time today, like some real time before we do anything, to talk about who Tamla was.
I think that's a lovely idea. In all my years of true crime geekdom, I've never run into a victim who I just felt totally enamored by. She seemed like a really fucking cool lady.
Yeah, I would have wanted to be her friend.
Same, and she probably would have wanted to be yours. Unfortunately, her willingness to make quick friends with everyone she met may have been her downfall.
Yeah, Tamla was regarded by her peers as a social butterfly, a proud and dedicated mother, the life of any party she walked into. She was a fiercely dedicated wife and mother of six.
Five boys, one girl. The eldest daughter, actually, from one of her husband's previous relationships, but Tamla raised her as her own.
Such a nice lady. And the daughter was expecting. Tamla and her husband, Leander, were super excited to become first-time grandparents. She somehow managed to be, like, a super involved mom, but also, like, a cool mom.
Hey, it's a delicate balance. She loved attending her boys' football games, volunteering at school events, all of it. She was extremely proud of her family.
You know, actually, the night that she died, she FaceTimed her family to show them all off to the rest of the party.
That is adorable and also heartbreaking.
Yeah, I can only imagine being, like, embarrassed that my mom was making me watch her brag about me and then, you know, realizing that it was going to be the last time.
Shit, I didn't even think about that. Okay, well, let's not get ahead of ourselves, though. Tamla was from the Caribbean, right?
Yes, Tamla immigrated from St. Vincent and the Grenadines to the Bronx in 1989, met Leander in Florida, who she was just totally in love with, had a whole bunch of babies, and then moved to Forsyth County for Leander's new job. By this point, the couple had been married 16 years, and their children ranged from the ages 4 to 14.
And Tamla's friends say that the family was just, they were all really, really tight.
Yeah, super loving and close.
What's that like? Anyway, okay.
Yikes! Can't wait till we get to talk about that Talkspace.com sponsorship so you can use that offer code.
We love therapy.
Anyway, want to talk about how freaking racist Forsyth County is?
No, but let's do it anyway. How racist is it? I'm so glad you asked, Alex. Forsyth County, Georgia is so racist that in 1912, its white residents forced all of its black residents out, wreaking havoc on their homes and businesses and eliminating its entire black population. A little over 1,000 people at that time. Charlotte, how racist is it?
Forsyth County is so racist that in 1987, after 75 years of not having a single black resident, black demonstrators marched in the county and were met with white counter protesters who threw rocks at them and shouted racist slurs at them, demanding that the county remain racially pure.
Yep. Connor, how racist is it?
Tomato.
We're talking about racial cleansing and you're the one triggered? What's up?
I know, I'm sorry, I don't know, should we be making this a bit? It might upset people.
I mean, probably not, but like, I'm just trying to get through this and this is the only way I know how to get through it, so.
Okay, yeah.
Back in 3, 2, 1.
Forsyth County is so racist that after those protests garnered national attention, Oprah, she came down, she went out of the way, she came to the county, she spoke with its residents for a segment where many insisted that black residents, they weren't welcome, and Oprah and her producers had to leave the county before the sun set for their own safety.
All right. Think that sets the scene?
I think so.
Great. Now, let's dive into the case. As we said earlier, Tamla was super involved in her kids' lives, loved volunteering at the school, and loved getting to know other moms in her community. At one of her kids' football games, she received an invitation from her friend, another football mom, John Myers.
The invitation being to her 45th birthday party, which was an all-women's pool party slash adult sleepover slash football watch party, where they'd all have full permission to get as lit as they would like without having to worry about driving home.
Your boys ready?
Stacy, they never let their team down. How about yours? Are they excited?
Oh, they were climbing the walls to get here today. It's so good to see you. It's been too long.
You too. Life is never dull with 5 kids at home.
Well, speaking of, it's Jean's birthday soon, and I'm throwing together a little shindig for her. Wanna come?
What about a party? What you say, Tam? What about a party? Could be nice not to give a damn. Nothing like a little bash to put your troubles out of sight. I can see you wanna come on just a single weekend night.
Hey, Stacy. And your name's Tamla, right?
That's me.
I'm Jim. I've just heard so much about you and your family from everyone.
I'll have to check my schedule.
So many kids at home, it must be stressful.
Not really.
Despite your circumstance, it seems you've been successful.
Thanks.
So come and celebrate, this party won't back.
I'll check my schedule.
Quiet down, the kids are coming back.
The time flies, watching our boys on their battlefield. In my eyes, no matter the outcome, they're winning.
You put your troubles out of sight. I can see you wanna come on just a single freaking night.
What about a party?
What you say,
Tam? What about a party? Could be nice not to give a damn. Nothing like a little bash. You put your troubles out of sight. I can see you wanna come on just a single weekend now.
Adult sleepover. I can't tell whether I love this idea or hate this idea.
You hate it. I can't even get you to stay the night at my place when we're up till 4 a.m. doing research.
My bed is just so comfy.
Tamla was described as such an open and friendly person. She accepted the invitation despite her best friend Michelle Graves' advice, who wasn't feeling the idea from the jump. Michelle ends up being one of Tamla's biggest advocates after her death, but we'll get into that later.
Yeah, the night of the party, Tamla cooked dinner for her family and made a casserole for breakfast for the next day.
Literally super mom.
And she arrived to the party at around 8:30 p.m. on November 4th, 2017. Promptly, she changed into her paw print onesie pajamas, offered John a gift of very expensive tequila, which Jean declined.
Yeah, she was sure to say in her witness statement that the smell of tequila made her want to throw up in her mouth.
Not a very gracious host, huh?
Not at all, but Tamla was like, okay, cool, I'll drink it myself.
Problem solving.
So yeah, at the party of 9 white women and 2 of their partners, Tamla was the only black person present.
Wait, I thought that the party was supposed to be all women.
Yeah, this is a great example of how fucking weird things got, how fucking quickly. John's 27-year-old boyfriend, Jose Barrera, and Thomas Smith, the husband of Stacy Smith, who hosted the party, decided that they were going to stay.
Why?
Well, no one really knows exactly why. The reasoning they gave in their interview cited multiple reasons. Jose says he wasn't feeling well. Thomas said there was another party happening at his own house, and he didn't want to be there. Then Jose says that he didn't want to spend any money to find a place to go. I don't know. But Jose says that he asked John if he and Thomas could just kick it in their basement theater room and watch football and stay out of the way.
So did they actually stay out of their way?
Of course they didn't. They came up for snacks and then they didn't leave anybody alone. They ended up all watching the LSU game together, socializing, drinking tequila, playing cards against humanity.
Playing cards against humanity with only one black person in the room should be a crime within itself.
Yeah.
The night continues. Everyone's drinking. In true Tamala nature, she has made friends with all the women at the party, even the ones she did not previously know. The photos of Tamala from the party, including the eerie one of her that later went viral, show her smiling and close with the other women. Tamala was said to have smoked a little weed at the party, which John says she asked her to put out, referring to her as the female Bob Marley. John was also sure to remind her that her boyfriend, Jose Barrera, was a pretrial officer and did not approve of the use of marijuana.
Ugh, what a narc. First tequila, and then a woman can't just enjoy a joint? What kind of party is this?
I'm saying!
One of the things that's consistent in everyone's accounts of the night is that despite her drinking, Tamala seemed totally in control of her faculties. I mean, she wasn't stumbling, she wasn't slurring her words, she seemed buzzed at most.
Which is surprising, because in every other way, the witnesses' testimonies are an inconsistent, blame-shifting mess.
Some of the interviews, like, who are these people?
Yo, Bridget Fuller? Very much weirdo behavior. Did you read that one?
Yes, yeah. The one who had, like, this weird superiority complex, who hated Jen with a passion.
Oh, shit, there was beef at the party?
Yes, bro. Bridget Fuller's account of the party is almost, like, half shit-talking about this woman named Jen.
Who was apparently just trashed and insecure. She's, like, asking everybody there if they really actually liked her.
Not that
she had to be carried to bed at the end of the night.
Yikes. Embarrassing. Needy drunks are the worst.
Excuse me. That comment feels like a personal attack. I just want to be loved on, you know?
Yeah, never drinking White Claws with you again.
Wait, you got drunk like that on White Claws?
My tolerance is low. I'm a social justice powerhouse. I don't have time for tequila and things. Moving on. So, Tamala called her husband Lee and FaceTimed her kids to show them off around 11 p.m. By Lee's account, she was having fun and happy to be having some girl time. The guests at the party who didn't intend to stay the night start to filter out around 11:30 p.m. and John and her boyfriend are said to have headed to bed around 1:30. The last person who saw Tamala was the aforementioned Bridget Fuller, who saw Tamala eating a bowl of gumbo before she was picked up by her boyfriend at 1:47. Bridget says that Tamala told her that she planned to have one last cigarette and head to bed shortly after. That was the last known account of Tamala alive. The security system at Meyer's house showed that the back door opened, closed, and then opened for the last time at 1:57 a.m.
The following morning, Jean's aunt, Madeline Lombardi, who also lived in the home, woke up at like 8:45 to make her morning cup of coffee, and then through the window, she saw Tamala in her paw print pajamas, lying face down in the grass below the balcony.
Char, can you pull up some of the direct text from Madeline's interview? I want you to read this shit for yourself.
Yeah, for sure. Like, after she saw Tamala's body?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't start the coffee. I got on my knees and said a prayer.
And then I ran upstairs and I knocked on the door and I thought I heard water running and I thought maybe it was John taking a shower. So I went downstairs because I like thinking I shouldn't wake up. Maybe she's up. So I went downstairs and I looked out the window again and it was just like I couldn't believe my eyes. I was saying inside my head, she's not moving. She's not moving. So then I went and knocked on the door louder.
So she saw an unmoving body of someone that she knew outside of her home, but she didn't want to interrupt Jean's shower.
Also, a prayer? Not 911, not CPR, a fucking prayer?
I don't understand.
I really don't know what you two expect. Let's take a break. I'm hungry.
Works for
me? Yeah, for sure. I'm not sure how to help.
We can. Just, you know, let her have her time.
I knew this case was going to be a tough one.
I mean, they're all tough, yeah, but this one, I think, just means something more. We're going to get a much-needed drink after this. Want to come?
I'm not sure. I kind of had plans with a friend.
A friend? Hey, what do you mean? Alex and I will be there.
Another friend?
Don't you fucking say it.
I promised him that we would play WoW together.
Oh my god,
tonight.
He's a creep, Connor. He's a creep. He doesn't deserve friends or to play World of Warcraft or to have people eat his weird, freaky baking projects.
It was a good, normal, not freaky red velvet cake, and he is not a creepy person. He's misunderstood, and he has some poor boundaries, but he's a good dude.
Okay, listen, my friend in high school literally had to get a new phone number and have her class schedule change because he wouldn't stop asking her out.
Really?
Yeah,
seriously?
Uh-huh. He would leave her little notes everywhere, like weird cryptic poetry, calling her cell and her house phone. And even when her dad picked up and threatened him, he didn't let up until the school administration got involved.
Well, so then maybe he needs, like, another dude his age to hold him accountable for this kind of stuff.
Okay, how did he manage to convince you he isn't a creep?
He explained that he brought over a cake as a thank you because the podcast has really helped him out through some tough times. And it's my birthday next week and nobody else was bringing me a cake.
Okay,
and
so are you at all curious about how he got your phone number and address?
You know, I kind of stupidly have all that stuff on my Instagram still and I don't know. Maybe he lives in the neighborhood, and maybe he saw me coming home.
Okay, stop making excuses for him. That shit is weird.
Okay, maybe it is, Charlotte, but I'm just gonna go ahead and trust my gut and be the guy's friend, because the guy needs a friend.
All right, fine. At the end of the day, it's your call.
So, find anything good to munch on?
You know your daddy stayed with the snacks. Carrots and hummus.
Do you ever just eat, like, cookies or something?
If they're oatmeal raisin.
Ugh, you're a weirdo.
Oh, hold on. Oatmeal raisin cookies are good if you leave out the raisins.
Yes, normalize oatmeal cookies without raisins. Let's start a movement.
Oh, I'm in. Shall we start the movement and continue, or shall we continue and start the movement later?
Yeah, we'll prioritize the movement later. Okay. Yes, let's do it. 3, 2, 1. So when Madeline does finally find John, who Madeline later says wasn't actually in the shower, but in her bed, she tells her she wants to talk to Jose.
So she chooses not to tell John that her friend is lying face down in the backyard, but instead John's 27-year-old boyfriend who met Tamla for the first time the night before.
Right. Mm. So far, Madeline saw body, stopped coffee, said prayer, knocked on the shower door. No answer, came back downstairs to confirm what she saw, went back upstairs, and asked Jose to come outside. Not a 911 call, not an effort at CPR, none of that.
Oh, and it gets worse. Jose then chooses, hold on, side note. During Madeline's account of the events, Jean bursts into the interview.
Yes, talking about some, I'm gonna have to start charging y'all rent.
Because the interviewers conducted most of this stuff at the residence.
Whoa, they conducted witness interviews at the house that this shit happened?
Yes.
What in the small town bullshit is
that? I'm saying. And then she decides to offer the cops gift cards to Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh no.
Look, I just went and got y'all gift cards. Then I was told I shouldn't because it would look very bad if I give you something before the case is closed. And it's very, it's very typical because I figure all cops love Dunkin' Donuts, right?
And then, get this.
Do you need me, or can I go upstairs and get ready for this funeral?
This funeral? Like it was for her fucking coworker's grandpa or something, and not for her friend who died in her house?
Right. Okay, back to the morning the body was found. Madeline tells John that her friend from the islands... that her friend from the islands is lying face down in the backyard and that Jose needs to come check it out. I'm not sure if she wanted Jose to come because he's a man or because he's a pretrial officer or whatever, but Jose goes out to find Tamla lying in the grass, unmoving. He said in his 911 call that he had tried to move her leg, but that it was stiff, and then goes back and forth over the course of the 911 call between saying that he couldn't tell if Tamla was breathing and then saying that she definitely was not breathing at all.
And it's honestly one of the most odd 911 calls that I've ever listened to.
Yeah, I mean, to me, he felt cold and calculated and I don't know, it's weird. Alright, let me hit you with a list of things Jose did do over the course of the 911 call. Jose did suggest that Tamla was drinking heavily and was the only smoker in the house, insinuating that the cigarettes on the balcony could have only been hers. Jose did offer that there was a cut on Tamla's wrist and suggested that it was self-inflicted. When asked how far the fall from the balcony to the ground was, Jose did say 20 feet if you were standing on the railing.
As if to suggest that she jumped.
Maybe. but it's an interesting measure of distance. Jose also did offer to check the security cameras, saying that the whole incident would have been captured on the footage.
Okay, but the officer surely told him not to do that, right? Like, that would be tampering with evidence.
Well, they did not. And the security footage was never actually given to the police, because it was conveniently deleted. John and Jose managed a really delicate balance of seeming very helpful and offering resources like the video, and then later on they're being like, oops.
Like, literally. Oops. Direct quote from her email to Officer Christian. Hey, Mike. So weird. I must have deleted that footage from that day. I'm not tech savvy, so I don't know if we can get it back. And then she offers her password and username to the security software. There were videos from the day before and the day following, but none from that night to that morning.
Shh. Oh, my God. I can't.
Now, back to Jose. Let's talk about what Jose didn't do. Jose did not check for a pulse, flip her over, or try to conduct CPR as he was trained to do as a pretrial officer.
Like, I get not wanting to tamper with a body, but why would he assume she was dead before trying to help?
Well, it was determined that Tamla was dead on the scene, not by EMS, who actually they weren't even sent to the scene, but by the investigators. And she was found face down, with one arm up and out, which was swollen and dislocated, and one arm down by her side. This was noted by investigators as particularly odd positioning, the lack of blood at the scene also being noted as unusual for a fall of this kind. Now, her body was then sent in for an autopsy where they found all of the following injuries on her. They found a severely broken right wrist with a 1-inch laceration, a laceration on her left forearm, blunt force injuries on her torso and extremities, 1/2-inch abrasion on her forehead and more on her left eyelid, nose, and chin, many severe head injuries, a fracture of her second cervical vertebrae, and laceration of the right ventricle of her heart, which is an injury most commonly associated with severe car crashes. And that's not even all of them, but I think you get the point.
Hmm. Okay, so all that from a 10 to 15 foot fall from a balcony.
That's what was decided. It should also be noted that Tamla had no bleeding or debris in her nose or mouth after allegedly falling face first into the grass, and no photos were taken of her body during the autopsy.
Shut up. That is unheard of.
Well, the investigators say she went out for a cigarette and accidentally fell to her death.
Okay. So let's talk about the patio. How high was the railing itself?
About 4 feet high.
So a woman who, by all accounts, was totally in control of her faculties managed to trip and fall over a 4-foot railing while out for a cigarette?
That's what they say the evidence suggested. We should also get into the toxicology reports. Do you have those too, Connor?
Yeah, I do. So, Tamla's blood alcohol content was 0.238, which is just slightly less than 3 times the legal limit to drive.
Yeah, she didn't appear more than buzzed?
Either she could really hold her liquor or something's weird.
And she also had, of course, some THC in her system.
Right.
As well as trace amounts of Xanax, which was not prescribed to her, nor was there any evidence of it on her person, and her family makes it clear that it was not something that they knew her to have ever been taking.
Some people saw that as evidence that she was drugged.
Okay, I'm confused, though. All those people asleep in her house and no one heard someone fall to their death?
Guess not. Now, let's talk about the investigation. Interviews were not taken until a few weeks after the incident, and like we mentioned earlier, many of them were conducted inside John's home.
And despite having weeks to put their stories together, many of the witness statements were conflicting with one another and with the evidence. For example, everybody was adamant that Tamla was the only smoker there, but there were 2 different types of cigarettes and lighters found on the balcony.
Also, investigators did not test those cigarettes for DNA.
Oh my God, what kind of an investigation is this? Someone tag me in, please put me in, coach.
Truly, fucking Josh could have done a better job than this.
Okay, tomato.
I know, I'll cut it out in post, fine.
Thank you.
Who's Josh?
The one who got the promotion.
You didn't get the promotion?
I did not, we already talked about it, it's fine, let's move on.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, it is. You know what? It is okay. That just means something better is on the way.
Yeah. Okay, something better is 1, too many Moscow mules, and a drunk cigarette tonight.
Just be sure to stay clear of any balconies.
Okay. Jeez, Alex.
I'll cut it out. 3, 2, 1. John's interviews were pretty inconsistent with the evidence, as well as just being odd. She seemed really dedicated to developing a rapport with Officer Christian, asking to call him Mike, making frequent jokes with him, as well as offering him and the other officers gift cards, which he said on record he had to decline. When recounting the morning they found Tamla, John said that she called 911 and immediately handed the phone to Jose, which is false. She did speak to police briefly before passing it off. She also said that while on the phone, Jose touched Tamla's back and tried to move her leg, and when it didn't move, said she wasn't breathing and rigor mortis had set in. As we said earlier, Jose switched back and forth over the course of the call between saying she wasn't breathing and saying he couldn't actually tell. He didn't actually ever make any comments about rigor mortis on the recording of the phone call.
Oh, would this be a good time to mention that the recording of the phone call cuts out in the middle? And that a portion of the phone call was never recorded?
It's always a good time to mention that. Also, John told police in the interview that she found Tamla with both arms by her side, even though notably one arm was up and out above her head by the time the investigators arrived.
The one with the broken wrist?
Yes. And John continued to double down on the way she had found her, saying that the other people who saw her were mistaken.
Wow, turning on her peers, huh?
Yeah, she also suggested that Tamla did cocaine.
What?
Oh, yeah. Wasn't she like, Diane told Paula told me that Tamla did coke.
Right, and was like, if she was drinking and smoking weed, and those are depressants, I don't know how she had all that energy.
Detective Sexton, this is so silly. All this was an accident. And everybody just needs to be there for each other and be kind.
It is just a tremendous mess. And you hit it there, nail on the head.
Freak things happen, like you said.
You did everything just square.
Her friend's out there telling tales, and
it's not fair.
All of us have tried our best.
You don't have to tell me twice.
Out there skating in the dark, and it's thin ice now.
The once sad women who survived.
High on coke and alcohol. What would you expect to find?
Treat us like we're
unkind.
What the hell? But there was no coke in her system.
No. She was just throwing shit at the wall, dude. Saying Tamla partied too much, all kinds of negative shit. Just smearing this dead woman. Now, let's move on to Jose's trifling ass. Connor?
Yeah, I gotcha. So Jose, in his interview, he said that he found Tamla's hands by her side originally, despite sketches and reports from investigators that had put one above her head. Officer Christian suggested that maybe someone had moved the arm, and Jose tells him that he was told to go inside and not to touch her by investigators, and that he wouldn't know anything about any movement.
Yeah, it just seems strange to me that someone would be able to move her arm if there was talk about rigor mortis and her leg being stiff. Yeah, all of this is pretty backwards. So what happened between Tamla being found and the investigators taking a sketch? Who moved her, or who isn't telling the truth?
These are good questions. And while you search for an answer, keep in mind that Jose had a direct relationship with the police and investigators on this case as a pretrial officer for the same department.
How convenient.
Jose also said, after Madeline told him that Tamla was face down in the grass, he took the time to move the loose cigarettes and the lighters from the back deck and put them near the fire pit.
Jeez. So Madeline saw the body and decided to pray. Jose hears about the body and decides to do a little tidying up. Like, are we not concerned for the woman laying face down in our backyard?
Yeah, there was little to no sense of urgency on anyone's part. I don't want to delve too deeply into anyone else's interviews, but I do want to say that some of the partygoers seemed genuinely shocked and saddened by Tamla's death. I hate reading so deeply into other people's statements, but because there's so little evidence in this case,
and such a shit show of an investigation,
right, one does kind of have to go based on feelings, and some of the interviews were heartbreaking.
Yeah. Okay, shall we take a quick break and then come back and talk about the aftermath?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So, obviously, after the investigation concluded her death in accident, Tamla's families and friends were left with many questions. In particular, her friend Michelle Graves demanded media attention after Tamla received none in the 2 months following her death. They hired another medical examiner to view her body, where they found indication that some of Tamla's injuries were inflicted post-mortem. Suspicions of foul play spread online, along with a photo of all the women smiling at the party, Tamla the only brown face among them in the middle.
Michelle Graves continued to be very vocal about her belief that what happened to Tamla was not an accident, and eventually wound up with a temporary protective order from Jean Myers, as well as a cease and desist to keep her from speaking anymore.
The protective order was dismissed, but in the midst of that conflict, Jose Barrera was found using his position to illegally access files about Tamla's case.
What?
Twice.
Once on November 7th, days after her death, he looked at her incident report file, and then again on November 20th, he accessed the file about the restraining order John tried to take out on Michelle.
Was he charged?
Of course not. He was a cop. But he was put on administrative leave and then fired 2 days later.
Which was not rare for him. He had been fired from his last two jobs in law enforcement as well. And I mean... How do you manage to lose a job in law enforcement? You can literally do whatever you want.
We love the truth.
Oh, fuck. Did you guys see this? This picture Jean Myers posted on Facebook last year?
Do we even want to know?
Probably not, but it's kind of the job, isn't it?
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so remember when Jean tried to bribe the cops with Dunkin' Donuts gift cards?
Yeah.
Well, on December 7th, 2020... she posted a Facebook photo of her and two other women wearing Dunkin' Donut masks, which she captioned, "Best masks ever, hashtag if you know, you know."
Jesus, it's a fucking joke to her. She's laughing about the whole thing.
It's like just, it's, this is a slap in the face to Tamla and her family.
It's a slap in the face to everyone, really. Cases like this and their absolutely gross mishandling inspire a sort of, it's like a collective mourning. It's really a remarkable thing that happens. This woman, you know, like, you look at her and you're like, that's my mom. That's my aunt, my sister. And it sort of confirms our fears about occupying these white spaces who pretend to care about us, but inevitably are going to offer the cops who miscarried our investigation fucking gift cards to Dunkin' Donuts and then laugh about it, you know? The case continued to garner attention, but experienced a little dip in energy until George Floyd was executed publicly on camera. There's a sort of pattern in the movement where when a black man becomes the face of our outcry, there are communities of people who are like, hey, black women too. Sandra Bland never got justice. Breonna Taylor never got justice. And Tamla's just one of those cases that I think sort of sit at the back of our collective mind. In 2020, people really started talking about Tamla again. Petitions started circulating, one of which gathered more than 500,000 signatures. Tamla's case has since been reopened, but without updates. But reopened, nonetheless, so that's something, I guess. I want to leave you all with a letter from the family's lawyer, Ralph Fernandez, which I think says more than I could.
Dear Leander, 2 weeks ago, we finished the exhaustive review of the records related to the investigation into the death of Tamla. I'm glad we had an opportunity to conference today with the rest of the immediate family. Hopefully by Tuesday, I will have a more detailed analysis, but for today, however, I want to repeat some of what I told you. The review reflects that a homicide is a strong possibility. Witness statements are in conflict. A potential subject handled the body as well as the evidence prior to the law enforcement arrival. Evidence was disposed of and no inquiry followed. The scene was not preserved. Evidence was inappropriately handled. The investigation was compromised by unauthorized access and disclosure to potential targets and witnesses. A remarkable fact is that there were no photographs taken during the autopsy of Tamla's body. This had to be done at someone's directive because such a practice is unheard of. Let us address one issue as a sample, in reverse order from the above. It appears Tamla was involved in a struggle. There were abrasions noted consistent with that scenario. There were parallel scratches to one arm. Since they were fresh, photos would have proven recent use of defensive force. But having no photo injuries to our detriment, there was one x-ray, yet the injury noted as the cause of death appears nowhere. Getting the records has been another monumental task, to say the least. I could go on, and will in a few days. Forsyth County Sheriff's Office employees have been the subject of much criticism. The case agent was a close friend of a subject who turned out to be the leak of the ongoing investigation. The town of Cumming has a history which raises eyebrows. After conducting my extensive research, I've come to the conclusion that the truth never had a chance here. Let me conclude by telling you that my years of experience led me to believe that 80% of cases where African Americans die under mysterious circumstances end up closed or cold because there are no videos and the only witnesses are bad guys or good guys that deep down are really bad. Then you have cases where law enforcement does a poor job and cares little to investigate thoroughly because of some connection or association to the perpetrators. Take the Ahmaud Arbery slaying recently. Without the video surfacing in the media, there would have never been an arrest in that crazy relationship between the perpetrators, the prosecutors, and the investigators. A rookie lawyer that gets a video in a wrongful death case where a stopped car is rear-ended by a speeding semi will win each time. A video of someone walking up to a bank teller face uncovered and firing a gun point blank will most certainly lead to a conviction. But those facts are not what we are dealing with here. Here we are fighting an uphill battle because those who wear the badges and were entrusted with the investigatory task failed you. But this is not over. It will never be over. Be safe, be strong, we will get to the bottom of this. Sincerely, Ralph E. Fernandez.
All right, we did it.
Yeah, good job, dude.
Thanks, never doing that again, but thanks. I'm sorry I was not kind today.
Stop, you were fine.
I thought I wanted to do a case about a black woman, but I didn't really consider that then I'd have to do a case about a black woman.
Yeah.
I thought I was doing the right thing, but I don't want to talk about black death anymore.
So we won't.
Easy as that.
Cool.
So, what are we drinking tonight?
Everything.
Okay, you know you're going to have 2 mojitos and then take your ass home.
You don't know me. You coming, Connor?
Oh, no. He actually has plans with... You know what? You tell her, Connor.
I'm playing World of Warcraft tonight. With Mitchell.
You know what? I don't even have the energy today. Don't die. Text me when you get home. Cool if I clean up tomorrow?
Y'all good.
Aight, let's hit it.